Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 80 and a half. That is right. It is bonus edition content. Finally, back to bonus edition content. Cole Coffey still not here in Manchester, England. He actually went camping, I believe, this weekend. Enjoying himself a nice weekend off. But instead, I got my two homies right here. Our good man Simon Head from The Sun. And, of course, MMA Junkie's own Abby Subban. And we are wrapping up. It's, as we start recording this, it's a little after 9:30 in the morning, which is insane. We did that because UFC 204, Bisping versus Henderson 2, kicked off at midnight tonight, wrapped up a little after 6 a.m., about 5 a.m., I guess, press conference, all that. I see as the yawns are going around. I know it's been a couple hours. I, of course, am keeping with tradition, having a few frosty beverages to celebrate the night before I go jump on a plane and we all head back to our respective destinations. Let's start with you, Simon. Tell me about just your overall take of what I thought was a fantastic scene.
It was quite remarkable, wasn't it? You know, the city of Manchester's got this very rich fighting tradition. Anyone who knows anything about combat sport knows the Manchester Arena, home of the great Ricky the Hitman Hatton, one of the biggest boxing superstars ever in this country. And it played host to a through-the-night event where he fought Costas Yu. And that really catapulted Ricky into superstardom. He became a pound-for-pound star at that point. They repeated the trick last night with a through-the-night event that a lot of people thought would flop.
Mm-hmm.
And it did anything but. It was a fantastic show. The fights, with one notable exception, delivered. We had a string of finishes. I'm just looking down the fight card. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 finishes in a row.
That's ridiculous.
Has that ever happened in a card before? I don't know. And that includes a run of 5 submissions in a row, which Mike Bond informs me is some sort of record as well. So that's incredible. And we had mixed fortunes for the Brits, but we really did have some spectacular stuff on that card. And obviously, at the very top of the card, Michael Bisping going through the fire again to become a reigning, defending world champion. It was a genuine privilege to be there. And the atmosphere at points was almost, it almost eclipsed anything I'd experienced covering the sport. It was up, right up there.
It was nuts. We you know, the first fight kicked off at midnight. 16,000, a little over 16,000 was what the attendance was given to us as. I would say 80, maybe even 90% were in their seats for the first fight. So that was it was a great atmosphere, you know, chanting and singing and, you know, great stuff all the way. We'll get to the fight specifically because I know we're all going to have some opinions on Michael Bisping and Dan Henderson. But I should say, Abby, as amazing as the atmosphere was, the venue perhaps left a little bit to be desired from our point of view, from an operations point of view. Internet was a stress. Having Wi-Fi access throughout the card was difficult. You guys were kind of working in the press room, which the press room was actually two press rooms, and the quarters were a little bit cramped. And, you know, not to sound like we're a bunch of whiny bitches or anything like that, but I will say that there were some things that, you know, left something to be desired.
Yeah. Had no internet for the whole night, basically. So all I could do was edit. And, I mean, I did try to upload. I mean, there was, like, you know, moments where we had a little bit of internet. So I'd get one or two videos up into our, you know, our system.
We didn't get things as fast as we wanted tonight.
Of course not. No. It's normally a case. It's one certain a UFC PR girl who really tries. She's so helpful, but every time she's on a fight card with us, something goes wrong. And she always says it's me, isn't it? It's my fault. Shout out to Iwalina. She's awesome. But it was definitely a tough night. But every time, I mean, you know, the guys in the back, Kenny will tell you, we barely get to see the fights. It's on in the background almost at the time. We have no volume on the TV. But from what I could see, every time I looked up, someone was getting finished. Someone was getting dropped. It looked fantastic. And you could hear the atmosphere. You could hear the atmosphere from where we were. And we were down in the basement, bro.
Yeah, that's amazing. It was loud. It was really cool, man. Those European crowds, we start chanting and getting into it like a soccer game, you know. It's really something to behold. All right, let's talk about the main event. Michael Bisping versus Dan Henderson. Simon, you hit the nail on the head. He went through the ringer again, man. This was another war. Incredible. You know, I think all of us going in were basically picking Bisping, but we all said, but that damn right hand from Henderson. Not that it took, you know, an MMA expert to be able to, you know, to figure that out. But sure enough, they go at it, and Mike's looking good, moving around well, doing great. And there's the H-bomb, floors him. And then on top of that, Dan Henderson leaps forward with the diving punch exactly like UFC 100. It looks like we're getting an instant replay of the first fight. But this time, it didn't land flush. Mike was able to crawl out of it, get back to his feet. And, man, just the feeling in that building was something special because, you know, for him to be tested like that, to be hurt like that, and then to get back on his feet in front of the English crowd, oh, man, the love that they were pouring was awesome.
He's undefeated in the UK, and I know from talking to him, that means a lot to him. That really does mean a lot to him. And there is no way that – I mean, he would have needed to have been knocked Spark out in, right. in order to have lost that fight. It was really interesting. You talk about the crowd and the dynamic, and it was almost as if they were an extra participant in the fight because the crowd were loud. They were chanting. There, you know, there'd be a chant start at one side of the arena, and then it would work its way round, and then everyone would sort of catch on, and everyone would be chanting, you know, "Let's go, Bisping," and "Stand up if you love Bisping," and all this. It was amazing. But then when the H bomb hit, everyone took a collective gasp. It was like the singing stopped and it got very quiet. It wasn't silence, but it was like genuine concern. You know, like when you see something, you think, "Oh my goodness, oh my God, what's going on?" And it was like that. Everyone clenched in the crowd, basically. And then it was, is he going to survive? We've seen, everyone had seen the build-up. Even those who maybe weren't hardcore fans will have seen the build-up. VT, they aired it on the screens before the fight, and then he got out of it, and then it was the outpouring of relief, excitement, euphoria,
right.
Everything was like, bang, our boy's still in this, let's get behind him, and it really was remarkable. And the noise the second time around, because the first round he needed a little bit of help from the buzzer, I think, because if it carried on too much longer, he could have found himself in trouble. He moved around just enough. The second round was notably different because he got dropped again, but this time he fought his way back to his feet. And that, for me, was the statement of the fight. It was, you've dropped me twice. I'm not going quietly this time, Dan. And he got himself back up and he pinged Henderson with a really, really good 1-2 at the end of the round. And the crowd went nuts. And it's probably the single loudest individual moment I've ever heard in an arena, because the crowd were like, yes, we're in this with you.
Our guy's still in this, man. Our guy's still in this.
It was, when you watch the England soccer team, not so much these days because we're terrible, but or if you watch your soccer team in a cup final or in a big derby football match and you come from behind and you get that equalizer, or you've equalized and then you get back in front, or you've had a man sent off and you score a goal, and it's like you're kind of sticking it to the man sort of thing. The outpouring of emotion when that happens, you get it in those sorts of sporting environments. In a fight you don't always get that so much, but this was just like whoosh, everyone was in there, and the home team was on the way back, you know, and it was a real privilege to be there as a British journalist to be able to say I was there to see him win the world title will always be really special to me. This was right up there with it because the whole country was there with him tonight. Whereas before in LA, everything was from a distance. This, he had the whole country with him tonight, and he really did. He really did put his stones on the line and got the job done.
Abby, you guys had kind of a funny moment in the back, speaking of the English media. I guess basically Stefan Struve had made his way back to talk to you guys right about the time of the main event, and there was nobody there to talk to him.
Yeah. What had happened was, I mean, not taking anything away from Stefan's performance, he did say he was he felt lethargic. because of the time he was fighting.
3 a.m. time,
yeah. 3 a.m. He said his calf muscles felt like stone. He had too much lactic acid in
his
system.
Should have stayed up drinking late like we did all week. Exactly. We had to figure it out. We told him.
So I was sitting and I was still editing, and I was like, it was main event time. So everyone was gathered around, ready to watch. And then Iwelina, the UFC PR girl, she tapped me on the shoulder. She goes, "Stefan's here now." And I was like, "What?" And she goes, I know. Because what Stefan actually wanted to do was watch his teammate fight, which was, who's his teammate? He had a teammate on the card, right?
One of the Black Zillions?
Yeah.
He wanted to watch Vitor fight?
Yeah, he wanted to watch that fight, so he stayed back and postponed the interview.
Well, maybe Gegard, because he's Dutch?
I can only think it was him, because there's no one else who would have trained with Stefan.
All right, anyway, that's what it was something to do with waiting on someone.
So that's why you guys were home.
Yeah, so, and then As I ran into the press room to switch on my camera, I realized it was only me and someone else. I can't remember. Oh, Lee from MMA Crazy. So it was just us two. And then eventually other people's, because he joined. And so we asked them questions, but they were really quick. It was just like, yeah, so how did he do? Who do you want next? And he was like, at the end of it, it's like the interview, you check everyone's footage on YouTube, whatever, it's 3 minutes.
So no follow-up questions.
No follow-up questions. And then he was just like, "That's it, huh? You just want to watch the main event, don't you?"
Amazing.
And everyone just kept quiet, pretty much like, yeah. And he just walked off.
And of all the people, you've got to try and move on. I know.
I've got nothing but love for Stefan Struve, but you know.
It was main event time.
Yeah, it was main event time.
All right, well, let's lay it out there then. We've talked about what drama it was. Simon, right after the fight, you said you think it might have been even more exciting than the Anderson Silva fight. I don't know if I'll go that far. I think that Anderson Silva fight for me earlier this year is one of the fights of the year and one of the greatest fights I've ever seen, to be honest with you, in terms of just the emotional roller coaster. And this had that same bit, but maybe it wasn't quite as – I don't know. It wasn't quite the drama. But let's lay it out there. How did you have the fight scored?
Right, I need to give you full disclosure on this for two reasons. Number one,
your mental math is bad.
My math is terrible. On my live blog, which I was writing on the Sun website, I announced that my unofficial, very unofficial score was 48-47 in favor of Michael Bisping.
Right.
However, if I could have added up properly, my scorecard would have read 48-46 to 48-46.
Okay, so you had a 10-8 in the first round.
I gave Dan Henderson a 10-8 in the first round. Controversially, possibly, I gave Michael Bisping round two. And the reason I gave Michael Bisping round two was because he was, for me, he was dominating the round. Mm-hmm. And even when he got dropped by Hendo, he had Hendo wobbled at literally seconds beforehand. And then, having been dropped, he fought his way back and then started landing big shots. So the effect of that one knockdown as Hendo's only offense of the entire round, as I saw it, really did... this is getting very strange. I'm doing my best to explain this. Mike Bond is...
Is he yelling on the phone over there?
He's yelling on the phone.
Uber driver's an idiot.
He's blissfully unaware that we're recording a live podcast.
This is a live radio studio.
I know, we're trying to be professional.
Professionals.
Basically, my maths is... beverages. I gave Bisping round two, perhaps controversially. I want to watch the fight back.
Yeah.
Because it was one of those fights where I was trying to write a Jimmy Manoa fight report at exactly the same time. Because I needed to get that up as quickly as possible. So... obviously, I didn't have my 100% scoring hat on.
Right.
And I thought Bisping won 3, 4, and 5. So that's how I gave it to him. I thought it wasn't that difficult a fight from round three onwards to score. I know some people gave Henderson round five, but I didn't see that.
Well, young Mike Bond, he's got to run out the door, unfortunately. He's heading out, or we would have had him sit in for a little bit more. But I think he actually did score at 48-47 for Henderson. He had Henderson winning rounds 1, 2, and 5. So let's break that down. You know, round one, I think, was – there's Question there. It was a 10-9 or 10-8. I went 10-9 in that round. Certainly the H-bomb was massive. It knocked him down. And Bisping was in trouble. The fight was, you know, I won't say almost finished, but yeah, damn near it. I mean, it was close. Yeah. And so, you know, maybe that leans toward the 10-8 criteria. So I'm just going to say right now, I have no problem if somebody says that's a 10-8. For me, it was a 10-9.
It was close, I think.
I felt like Bisping had done enough in the first part of that round that it wasn't complete domination. So round two, I thought, was also very, very close, but I did end up going with Michael Bisping with that. Here's the reason for me is just that, again, it was one punch for Dan Henderson. It was one moment. And again, it was a significant punch. It was something that had Michael Bisping in trouble, but it had been an entire Michael Bisping round up to that point. So I actually went 49-46 for Michael Bisping. I thought rounds 3, 4, and 5 were clear Michael Bisping rounds. I was surprised to hear a lot of people gave Dan Henderson round 5, including our own Mike Bond. I'm okay. To me, I think there's – I think 49-46, the score I issued, is acceptable. I think 48-47, Michael Bisping, is acceptable, giving Dan Henderson round 1 and round 2. And I also see a draw being acceptable if you see a 10-8 round 1. I just think those were, you know, debatable back and forth.
Yeah.
I didn't think that Dan Henderson took round 5. I see some people that were saying, what about the takedown? Takedown, to me, never established position, never really did much, to be honest with you.
He had him in some sort of cradle or something and just basically stayed there almost as if he was either too tired to do anything or didn't really know how to improve his position from where he was.
Right.
And in the end, he kind of gave up on it.
I agree. I didn't think he did much. Abby, give me the feeling back in the press room. I know everybody. I know the feeling being in the back. Everybody's working. But I know there's also a lot of British media there that were probably pretty into seeing how Michael Bisping was doing. What was the feeling back in the press room? How was it going down there and what people were, how were scoring it?
I could safely say I watched the first round.
Right.
I watched the first round. But then every time I looked up, Bisping was getting dropped.
That's what I could see.
But from what I could hear around me, it was a really exciting fight, and Bisping was the clear winner. That's what
consensus was.
Yeah, that's what I could feel. That's what I could hear from everyone. Everyone was saying that, yeah, Bisping won that fight. But seriously, every time I looked, it looked pretty even. It looked like Dan was giving as good as he was getting, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I couldn't hear properly in the room because the audio wasn't great.
Right.
Did Dan Henderson say in the post-fight interview that he wishes fights were judged on how people look after the fight? Did he say something like that?
In the cage?
In the cage.
I didn't hear that.
Something like that?
Because yeah, I couldn't hear anything.
If that was the case, then he would have won that fight. You know,
oh,
I mean,
definitely. Oh,
you
it was
know,
based
if you're basing
on
it on good looks, then yeah.
No, I'm just saying, like, Bisping looked
that eye was
wrecked,
a mess. Eye was a mess.
It was weird. I think it was the start of either the second or third round. It was like it started as like a swelling on the side of his head, and then it kind of went across his cheekbone, and by the end of it, it looked like he had a tennis ball under there.
Because everyone had stopped working. So I thought I'd take advantage of the Wi-Fi, and I managed to get a lot of the videos up. But every time I heard like, oh no, and like my hands were sweating because I am nervous because it is a Brit fighting for us. And you know, like, you know, I never thought I'd say, I said it to Mike Bond, as we were lining up, I said, well, I'm in Manchester. And Michael Bisping is main eventing and defending a title.
I never
thought I'd hear. You know, I never thought I'd do this.
That's
right,
and then
and it happened, bro.
Well, let's talk about Mike Bisping first. What, where he goes from here? Now, obviously, the first place he goes is back to California and heal up that eye a little bit because it's gonna be a little bit, man. That was rough. But
yeah.
First of all, I think there's a real case that we talked about it in the pre-fight show. That you say he's the fighter of the year in all of mixed martial arts. He's had an incredible year. It's been, covering his whole career has been fun, but covering this year, the wars with Anderson Silva, the war with Dan Henderson, the shocking knockout of Luke Rockhold, amazing. But I tell you what, and I don't mean this in any respect, because I have the highest level of respect for Michael Bisping and what he's done as a competitor, and what he's done as a showman. I mean, he's fantastic, but Jacare, Yoel Romero, Luke Rockhold, Chris Weidman. I might pick every single one of them against Michael Bisping. And that's tough, man. And I think it's so weird to say, like, maybe a guy should just go out on top, especially if it's like you're performing at the best of that you ever have. But, I mean, should that maybe be a consideration? Like, dude, it's never going to get any better than this. You fought twice in England in a year. You fought in Southern California where you live. I mean, you picked up wins over two MMA legends and, you know, a top-notch guy in Luke Rockhold, who was the champ at the time. It doesn't get any better than this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, but the way I see it is, like, people always count Bisping out, saying, like, okay, he beat Rockhold, but, you know, Rockhold is having an off night or something. He beat Anderson Silva. He's always wanted that fight, but Anderson Silva wasn't in his prime. He's beat Dan and Henderson, but what is that going to do? Did Dan Henderson even deserve a title shot? So now, like, and you say, you name the other guys, Jacare, Rockhold again, and who was the other one?
Romero. Or what?
Romero. And we're saying that they would eat him alive, but, you know, you're right. I don't think I'd like to see Bisping fight any of those, because he would just, I don't know. I can't count him out.
Can't count him out. Simon, what would you like to see for him?
I look at what's next, and I think it would have been great if he'd have hung him up in the octagon today. I just think that would have been the perfect scenario. Hang out the gloves and say, I'm in the perfect spot right now. Life doesn't get better than this. Here's the thing. The fights that potentially could come up next, he could fight Rockhold again. He's fought him twice. Okay, there's the whole trilogy thing, but it is what it is, right? He could fight Jacare again. From a sporting perspective, okay, there's some interest there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, Jacare does, with all due respect to Jacare, he doesn't sell tickets. Yoel Romero is a crazy man. but again, he's not main event. He won't carry a main event. Bisping will have to do all the heavy lifting there. And then you've got Chris Weidman, I think, would be the most intriguing one of the four. There's a beef that's been brewing for a while. And unlike Rockhold, it's one that hasn't been matched up before. So I think if Weidman gets past Romero, he's probably in pole position.
Right.
For two reasons. One, if Rockhold beats... Let's take a look at it, right? If it's Rockhold and Weidman who come out of these two fights as the winners, you look at Rockhold's last performance against Bisping, knocked out in 3.5 minutes. So you give Weidman the shot.
Mm-hmm.
If it's Jacare and Weidman, who both advance, if we like, in this unofficial tournament that we have.
Right.
You look at it and go, okay, they're both worthy challenges. Neither one has fought Bisping before. Which one does best business? Chris Weidman does the best business. So I think if Chris Weidman gets past Yoel Romero, he gets the title shot. And I think that's, of the four, I think that's the most compelling matchup. Because of the others, yeah, I mean, they're all worthy, but they're not, especially when you look at the last few fights that Bisping's had, it's a come down.
Yeah.
My question to you, so, I mean, I'm a bit surprised you saying that it would be perfect time for him to hang it up, but which is true in some sense of the word. But what about, like, everyone,
I mean, it's the perfect ending to the story.
But everyone is saying that
I'm a sporting romantic.
Dan Henderson did not deserve that title shot. So, like, there's always going to be a question mark. Do you think Michael Bisping would accept the fact that he retired, defended his title and retired against someone that wasn't worthy? He wants to fight someone that's worthy.
I agree with you. He told me, I interviewed him in Vegas just before he had the pre-fight press conference. It was just before the Conor McGregor weigh-ins, the McGregor Diaz weigh-ins at the MGM. And I said, how much longer have you got, Michael, seriously? And he said, I want to make 3 title defenses.
Wow.
He says, I want to beat Dan Henderson. Then I want to beat probably Luke Rockhold again. That would be quite cool. And I want to fight Chris Weidman. And they're the guys that we want. So I think I think the Weidman fight makes the most sense. I think it's the best sellable one. What it also does is it gives the chance for Rockhold to build some momentum. So if he fights Weidman, and if he were to get past Weidman, and Rockhold then comes off some momentum, then you've got some real heat behind a trilogy fight. It also helps Weidman as well, because if Weidman were to beat Bisping, you've then got the rematch angle with Luke Rockhold. So, but the it would be an exact rematch, because Weidman would have the belt again. So it would, I think that scenario, if you're putting your pieces and sort of being Garry Kasparov and working a few moves ahead of yourself, I think that's the best way forward. The one fly Chess in reference. The ointment here is Yoel Romero, who could just go in there and absolutely manhandle Chris Weidman. And if that happens, then I think...
That's a scary dude.
Yeah, he's a terrified man. He's a crazy man as well. But it's fascinating, because you could see Romero and Jacare win those fights, and neither one of those is going to be a box office hit. You could almost argue that if you were doing them and Bisping, you hold the fight over here in Europe again, or you make it as a co-main to an even bigger fight.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see how it all pans out. The thing about the retirement thing, though, Abs, it's just sometimes, and I asked Bisping about this, it's very hard for a fighter to know when to go out on top. And
100%.
You know, I think they can go the one more step. Oh, you know, one more this, one more that. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sure you like the nice payday, you know, when you're champ. Now the money's higher, you know. I'm sure you want that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get it. Like, once you're there, like, in your head, if I'm winning, if I'm the champ of the world, why would I walk away? But, damn, it just seems like it would be, like, the perfect ending, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he wants to go on a fight again. All power to him. He's earned the right to choose. That's the thing.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that he's done. I mean, obviously not. You know, he's shown so much heart. This fight with him. Covering him in 2016 has been amazing, man. The fights that he's been through have been incredible, man. But I don't know. I guess because he's worked so hard to get here and worked so long to get here, I almost like to see him be able to walk away and nobody ever be able to take it away from him. You know what I mean? Like, just go out on top and be like, damn it. You know, for Michael Bisping to me is like that guy. Like, I don't think he's the most gifted athlete in the world. You know what I mean? Like, I think he's just a tireless worker, man, with incredible commitment. And, you know, it's not like he has this knockout power where he can just finish people. I mean, he just outworks them, basically. And I don't know. Like, there's just a part of me that's would love to see him never have to lose that. You know what I mean? And certainly he'll always have the title. As you said, you know, Abby, he won it. He defended it in home soil. How amazing is that? But I don't know. Like, I know it's not easy to walk away on top, but I think it would be cool because then – you know, I mean, at some point those runs end, and I hate to see it happen for him. So, all right. Well, one guy that did call it a career, Dan Henderson. What can you say? I thought, honestly, I think he kind of looked better than he has sometimes. As weird as that sounds, like he wasn't shuffling quite as much. Like, I don't know, his body looked like he was in a little bit better shape. Sometimes he's just like flat footed, and you're like, dude, why? Oh my God, he's decrepit in there. Like, decrepit Dan is. As Bisping was calling him, but you know, I thought he looked good. But at the end of the day, he does have that one amazing weapon, that right hand. But I think if he'd have just picked up the volume a little bit more, I would have had no problem with the decision going his way, because I feel like all it was just Bisping's volume.
Yeah, I mean, when I think who did we? We interviewed Gegard Mousasi earlier in the week, and he said, yeah, Hendo's got that H-bomb, but he hasn't got the timing anymore. He dropped Bisping a couple of times, and from every time I looked, it looked like he timed it perfectly. You know, I think he still has his timing. And he did look better than he has previously. We were walking around with him this week around the Etihad Stadium, and that looked like a chore for him, you know? But I don't know, it was just... I think he just thought, okay, this is my last hurrah, I'm going out, guns blazing, either way, you know, and I just want to look good. But had he won, John, what do you think? I mean, we did a segment on a story on Junkie. Would he come back? Would he walk away, like, knowing that he's, all right, I've got the title? Nah. The main thing he's going to miss about walking away from the sport is the competitiveness.
Right.
So if you win the title, you're gonna want to compete and defend that title at least once.
I think he would have come back too. I mean, I know he said he wasn't, and again, that would be cool too. Again, to ride off into the sunset like that. But yeah, man, I think he would have come back. And every fighter we talked to was like, "How do you win the title and not come back?" Yeah, you know, yeah, what I mean? Yeah. But I do wonder, Simon, because I've said, and I've said for a long time, I think you can make the argument that he's the greatest American mixed martial artist ever.
Hell,
you look
yeah.
at what he's accomplished and what he's done. I wonder, I mean, it was funny because earlier in the week, like, say, the weigh-ins, you know, the crowd, like, wanted to boo him a little bit, but they were also like, damn, that's Dan Henderson, so we can't really do that. Tonight, when he was walking to the cage, they did boo him, and that makes sense. They were, you know, they were drunk, and it was 4 in the morning or whatever, but it was kind of funny because I was like, man, I'm not sure I've ever heard a Hindo booed before. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But I get it. You know, they're supporting their guy. But, you know, they were cheering for him and chanting for him at the end of the fight. You know, after they knew their guy had won, then it was okay to be respectful. But I just wonder, from an international point of view, I mean, is Dan Henderson is you know, not necessarily revered, but at least as respected abroad as he is at home?
I think those who know the sport know who Dan Henderson is, and they've got that amount of respect for him. I mean, you only have to see. It was one of the things I was actually most proud of, actually, as someone from this country who's associated with the sport, to see 16,500 people cheer their guy on for the entirety of the fight, but then give Dan Henderson the send-off that him and his career deserved.
Yeah.
The one thing I didn't want was for the fight to go whatever way, you know, it went, and for Hendo to get a lukewarm round of applause at mm-hmm. the end of it. He deserved to have his name chanted. I was sitting there willing the crowd to chant his name, and eventually they started chanting Hendo. And in my head, I was like, yes.
It's a hell of a send-off.
Because that's what the man deserves, you know? For his service to the sport, I was saying to someone in the press room after the fight, he conducts himself with complete class and dignity every single time. And of all the people that are in the UFC, you could give a pass to him for just being a little bit tired and cynical about doing all the media and stuff. He does it. He doesn't complain. He mm-hmm. just cracks on and does it. You know, answers the same old daft questions we give him and smiles his way through it. Mm. He turned up at the open workouts. Half of them were saying he's going to get knocked out. Half of them were sort of cheering him to knock Bisping out. And he enjoyed a little bit of back and forth with the crowd. And even after the fight, he said something along the lines of, why weren't you cheering me like this before the fight? You know, but it was, who was it? I think Mauro Ranallo, I think it's quite a famous piece of commentary, said, if you're creating an MMA Mount Rushmore, Dan Henderson would be on that.
100%.
And that, for me, is like the perfect description of him and you know, he's one of the true legends of the sport, because he spans generations.
Absolutely.
Not just in terms of age, but in terms of the development of the sport.
100%.
He's won world titles in different weight classes. He's won world titles in different parts of the world. He's a former Olympian, so he's got the legitimate background as well. He's got the lot, and you know, it's a genuine privilege to be able to have said that I've covered a Dan Henderson fight, and an even bigger privilege to say that I was there for his last fight.
Same, yeah. I mean, John, you've seen him fight all over the world, right? The first time I got to see Dan Henderson was in Sweden last year. Was it last year against Musasi? And it was so anticlimactic. I mean, the whole stadium were going crazy for Dan Henderson. They were going crazy. You could feel the atmosphere. It was huge. And then it ended. Like, yeah. Was it an eye poke or something?
Yeah,
something like that.
And
it was so anticlimactic. And, you know, and then, you know, it was so disappointing, but it was nice to see that. I can say that I was there for one of his fights and I was there for his retirement.
Amazing. It was tense. There's no doubt about it. It was just from start to finish, man. That 25 minutes was intense. Dan Henderson has nothing to hang his head in his final fight. Amazing performance overall. So close to winning that fight. And, you know, he thought he did. He said flat out that he thought he won it. But he says, look, this is it. I'm definitely calling it a career. And as you said, it's been an honor to cover him. He is certainly a living MMA legend. Said he hopes that the UFC will offer him a job. And hopefully they can find space for him. You know, he certainly wasn't a UFC lifer. He made his way around the, the crew a little bit, you know, and went to Pride, went to Strike Force, you know, did other things. But the guy is certainly a stud, and he showed it tonight. And, of course, I'm sure fueling even more a controversy, you know, he wasn't very beat up on his – he wasn't marked up on the face at all, and he showed up to the press conference. Meanwhile, Michael Bisping was a mess and was transported to the hospital and couldn't make it to the press conference. So you can't hear anything from champ Michael Bisping, but you can hear the final press conference of Dan Henderson.
So have you changed your mind about retiring, Dan?
Nope. That was unfortunately, that was the last one. It'll have to be an L on my record. But, you know, I left it all in there, and I felt like I did everything I needed to do to win that fight. And it just, unfortunately, everybody didn't see it that way.
It looked like you thought that, you know, when the judge's decision was being read, that you had done enough. How were you scoring it? What was your corner telling you? What rounds did you think you took?
Well, the first round, I mean, it was almost finished real close. And you know, I thought that was obviously a 10-8 round. But you never know, which is why I wanted to, you know, I thought I won the first two rounds. He won the third and fourth. And I wanted to make sure I went out and won the fifth. And I felt like I did that, went out and took him down. Landed some decent shots on him. You know, he honestly, I didn't feel hurt once in the whole fight from anything. With the exception of one leg kick that hurt my thigh a little. But that was about the only thing I felt in the fight, you know. It was unfortunate, and obviously by looking at him, he felt some of the shots that I hit him with. So it was, I don't know, I'm just real frustrated. I'd have to go home and watch it again to really be a little more educated talking to you guys about it, but that's how I was thinking. That's what was going through my head during the fight. I wanted to make sure that just in case I didn't, you know, I didn't want to end up with a draw. I wanted to make sure I won the fight and wanted to win that fifth round.
So with knowing you felt that way, I mean, do you walk away from the sport with like a bitter taste in your mouth of how it went tonight, or you know, are you just happy with everything that you've done and accomplished over the course of your career?
I don't know. I feel like you maybe have to ask me that in a few days. But I feel like I before this fight, I've accomplished enough in the sport and was satisfied with that. But obviously, there's one more thing I wanted to do, and really worked my ass off during training camp and thought I was ready to get it done. And I'm a little frustrated that feeling like I did get it done and didn't get credit for it, I guess. You know, but like I said, it is what it is now. There's no change in that, I don't think. And I just got to live with it.
And I know you never, at this point, when it came to the rematch, it seemed there wasn't anything personal towards Michael on your end, but he gave, you know, a lot of credit to you after the fight. What do you just feel about him now at this point after competing against him twice and then it going the way it did tonight?
I don't know. About the same. I never hated him before, you know. Just a guy that I would probably not want to hang out with. And I feel the same now. I didn't really hear what he said afterwards. You know, I've said it before the fight that I respect him as a person and as a fighter. You know, he's just not a guy I'd want to hang out with, and it's the same. I mean, I'd buy him a beer, but, you know, it's not a guy that I'd call to go hang out with, and he's just not my style.
Yeah, and, you know, a long career, maybe way too soon to ask you this, but can you pick out, you know, some of the top moments you've had or just anything that comes to mind?
Not this one, I guess. But I don't know. There's a few. Probably winning the second Pride belt would be on the top, along with winning a tournament a long time ago, the 32-man tournament that I won. The King of Kings tournament. So those are probably two of the toughest nights of fighting I've had. And, I don't know. I just, I'd have to look back now. I really haven't spent much time, especially in this training camp, knowing that it was my last fight. I didn't spend much time soaking in that this is my last time doing things. I wanted to focus on making sure that I got prepared and didn't want to get emotional about it. But, it's just, I'm just a little disappointed, not in myself, but just how it went. You know, I feel like I spent every bit of energy I had and left everything in there. So I'm completely satisfied with what I did tonight.
Hi, Dan, in the back here. Were you at all surprised by Bisping's game plan? Because it seemed, for the majority of the fight, they were circling towards your power hand.
I thought he was circling both ways. I was actually surprised that he was coming forward, you know, and pressuring me. I thought I was going to have to do that. I was a little surprised, and I have to give him props for having the balls to do that, standing in front of me, and he did a good job, you know. Except for the few times that I dropped him, but you know, he kept active, I guess, a lot more active than I did a couple of the rounds, you know. But I was surprised with his game plan, I guess.
Okay, and you were saying you weren't thinking about retiring, like post retirement after during your camp. Has it kind of sunk in now that it's all? I know we're literally only less than an hour away from the fight, but has it kind of sunk in now that it's all over, the long, illustrious career is over?
Not quite. You know, I think I'm still frustrated with the fight itself, and you know, but yeah, I think it's more frustrating to me knowing that I'm, you know, that was the last time and I won't be able to make up for that loss or whatever. You know, I knew there was a possibility of losing in any fight, but, you know, it's just more frustrating when you feel like you did enough out there to win and it didn't go your way, and you know, and then that was the last one. So you know, it is what it is. I'll be able to live with it. A beer will help.
Dan, front and center.
Yep.
Did you expect him so much to? He kept circling towards the big H bomb a couple of times. Did you expect him to be moving that way? And you kind of mixed it up. Like usually, you go for like the lead leg kick and then the follow over with the H bomb. But this time as well, you kind of shot like fainted a shot and then followed up. Did you expect him to be so prone to the H bomb after what happened last time?
Yeah, with certain things, maybe not the inside leg kick thing. I do that anyway, just to kind of break up the action a little bit. Yeah, I was surprised. I knew watching fights of his, even recently, you know, he circles both ways, but he still, you know, makes a mistake of circling the wrong way sometimes. You know, and I know he throws his lead leg kick quite a bit now, different than what he used to. None of that really bothered me. It just kind of kept me a little bit away sometimes and kept him looking a little more active, you know, but I just felt like I was waiting and picking my shot and waiting for the right time. And the first couple of rounds, I did a pretty good job. I landed it pretty good in the fifth round also. You know, didn't wobble him too bad, but I know that he felt it pretty good a couple times. But, yeah, I don't know. He drops his hands a lot. When I've watched other guys do the same exact thing, they just didn't quite hit him as hard.
And after the fight, after the decision was read, I saw you speaking with Dana White in the octagon. What did he say to you after the fight?
I think we were talking about the scoring, and he was surprised that it wasn't a 10-8 round, you know, which would have made it a draw at the very least, you know, depending on that fifth round. But, you know, that was about it. But he just expressed to me that it was an awesome fight.
And I know you said previously, you know, moving beyond your fighting career, you would like to stay with the UFC in some sort of capacity behind the scenes.
Yes.
Do you think that's a possibility? Has anyone hinted to you that they'd be willing to give you that opportunity?
I don't know. We'll see. I told Dana I'd be calling him for a job pretty quick, so we'll see what happens.
Idea what you would like to do?
Who knows, you know, just any type of spokesperson, and I don't know.
And just final thing for me, do you ever imagine, or was it planned, that you'd be the final strike of your career would be Rolling Thunder?
No, I didn't. That wasn't planned at all. I just thought I'd have fun with it and didn't think he was going to engage in the last few seconds, so I just kind of went at him and tried something different. Damn. For fun.
Dan over here. Yep. When you landed the two knockdown shots in the first and second, did it ever creep in your mind, hey, I could retire champion right now? What were your thoughts when you landed both of those knockdowns?
Actually, the first time I knocked him down, it flashed into my head about the first fight. And I think I kind of paused and went in a little bit more controlled rather than jumping in there and trying to punch him again. Similar than to the finish in the first fight I had with him. He wasn't quite finished enough, and I didn't get there soon enough and didn't land another follow-up punch good enough. You know, I hit him a couple more times, but just not square on the ground. And, you know, to answer your question, it didn't go in through my head right then. I knew that I had him hurt. I tried to finish him for a little bit, and then I decided just to pick my shots and pace myself a little bit and you know, make sure I wasn't using all my cardio in the first round.
Dan, UFC 17, 19, 98, Carlos Newton, Alan Goes. It's been a long, long road, nearly two decades. Can you just reflect for us on, you're leaving the sport now, where do you think it is right now and where do you think it needs to go? You are an elder statesman of the sport. In a nice way, I mean.
Well, you'd have to give me about an hour for that one. That was a...
Give us a couple of minutes.
Two decades worth of question there. You know, I think the sport, when I first started in it, obviously wasn't thought as a sport by most people. And has really evolved into what it is now. It's a true... one of the toughest, probably the toughest sport out there to do. And I think there's no other sport that other professional athletes respect more than MMA fighters and love the sport and know how tough it is. It's evolved into that. And with all these young fighters doing it at a young age and it's just something that has been a blessing for me to be able to witness from as a competitor for the last 19, 20 years and see where it's gone from almost nothing to where it is now, and it's still on the upswing. It's going to keep going upward and I can't wait to see where it goes in the next 10 years. And that's why I really am going to be a part of MMA still.
Thank you.
No problem.
Right. If you look at the division, who do you think has the best chance to take the title from Bisping?
besides me? I don't know. I think Jacare and Luke Rockhold, the winner of that fight, should probably get that next one. Weidman's right in there as well, and he's fighting Romero, isn't he? Yeah, so any one of those two winners, but I don't know. I think we'll see how I think it all depends on how those performances go when they win those fights. Whoever those winners are, I think the most impressive performance will probably get the next title shot. Masasi's right in there too, and I don't think he was quite up in where those guys were, and he did a great job tonight beating Vitor.
So when people retire, they have a retirement plan. Some people do golf or some other sport. How are you thinking about spending your days now?
Same as I do when I'm not training, just my Uber job driving my kids around. Four kids and keeps you busy. And I'm just looking forward to spending a little bit more quality time with them and not being so tired all the time doing it.
Hi, Dan, here, in your left, here. Did you feel emotional at any point of this week, or maybe right now, knowing that it was your last fight?
Maybe a little bit when I did an interview 15 minutes ago in the back there with she made me a little bit emotional, but not too bad yet. I think, it's going to settle in, it is what it is, and it's just unfortunate that it didn't come out as a W, and I'm disappointed. But I'm happy with what I left in the octagon today?
Dan, over here. Oh, sorry. What is it that you will miss most about being a professional fighter? What part of the process will you miss more than anything else?
Just the competition and testing myself in that way. Just there's no bigger test physically, mentally than this, you know, in anything in life. And it's I think the competition that I'll miss. Definitely not the preparation, but the competition I'll miss. So, you know, win or lose, I always learn something from fights, but, you know, I always prefer to win. But, yeah, just the competition I'm going to miss.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Dan Henderson, the final time that we'll get to speak to him as an active fighter. I'm sure we'll always get to hang out and talk to Henderson, but hanging it up after a fun fight with Michael Bisping. All right, Abby Subban has stepped away for a moment. We're all up against the clock, so we're trying to get things packed up and headed out as we all get ready to travel home. Some of us traveling a little further than others today, but all of us traveling back to where we go. So we brought in our man Shamat Karsandu, good friend of the show, and of course now the Brit Pack reunion is back together again.
Absolutely. Brit Pack is back.
It's like, yeah, the Brit Pack is back. It's coming up to almost, well, creeping up to 11 a.m. What a week it's been.
It's insane. It's insane. All right, let's talk about the co-main event. Gegard Mousasi, Vitor Belfort. Sandu, let me get your thoughts on this fight. Gegard looked phenomenal, of course, very patient. I think he knew right away that you know, he needed to wait out the big run from Vitor Belfort. He did that. But then when he finally landed that high kick, good God, did he just unleash a variety. I mean, it was like, I'm going for broke right now.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the Brazilian killer now, isn't he? 2016, that's three Brazilians in a row, and he calls out Anderson Silva. That's what he wants next. But yeah, I mean, I think he was a favorite going into this fight, and he performed like the favorite. And like we talked about earlier on, like even in his post-fight media scrum, I just like 2016 Gegard Mousasi. You know, he, not only is he getting the performances in the octagon, but he's letting some of his personality shine through a little bit. He doesn't give an F, you know, and I think people like that about him. You know, I think, you know, it's just a one way of him getting his personality across in an indirect way, sort of. And he's, you know, speaking his mind, and that's a good thing.
I love it, man. I thought it was great. Gegard has always been kind of a reserved person, and then he said tonight in the post-fight press conference, well, I don't feel like I'm getting what I deserve, so it's time for me to start speaking up a little bit.
Yeah,
it was fantastic.
Yeah, and you know what? Good for him. You know, I mean, I think sometimes I always say, you know, if you don't ask, you don't receive.
Right.
Right? So if you're sort of, you know, we talked about it earlier on, actually. Me and Simon were talking about this. There were so many times throughout the entire fight card where Brian Stann was actually teeing up, laying up opportunities for fighters to call out opponents. You know, you know, give us something to talk about. You know, who do you want? Who do we want to see you fight next? Who do you want to fight next? And, you know, good on Gegard Mousasi for, you know, throwing out Anderson Silva. Now, there's obviously rumors of maybe Anderson Silva, GSP, you know, making it onto that Toronto card. But listen, at the moment, it's just a rumor. We don't know for sure what's going on. And perhaps, you know, Gegard Mousasi can get that fight.
How'd you score the main event?
All right, so I scored it a draw. I scored it 47-47. Okay. I gave Dan Henderson the first round 10-8, which is obviously the round that I think everyone's debating on whether it's a 10-9 or a 10-8. But I scored it a draw. But I don't think I'd have any problem with if you scored it for Henderson or for Bisping or if you scored it a draw. I've got no problem with that whatsoever. But I scored it a draw 47-47.
Interesting. It's so funny because, again, I had it 49-46. But I don't have a problem with that score. I don't have a problem. I mean, I know that, you know, that's the only way you can score it. It was just, I mean, there were just some close damn rounds. So, yeah. Simon, Vitor Belfort, what does Vitor do, man? Where does he go from here? Here's another guy that's been around the sport forever, guy that's done everything, has entertained us for 20 years, man. But I think at this point, it's not looking good.
Whenever you get to this stage in a career, you sort of look at them and say, what's their motivation now? And normally these guys, they still think they can do it. They still think they can make a run at the title. And I think the reality is now beginning to set in that Vitor Belfort's days as a championship contender may now be behind him. The question at that point is, once that realization hits Vitor, he then has to ask himself, is he happy dropping down the ladder a little bit and taking fights that may still be competitive, but just at a slightly lower level? Because just because you're not a championship contender doesn't mean you're a busted flush and you should never fight again.
Right. he's just a popular figure.
The idea of the sport and the one of the reasons White is so successful is the fights in general are matched very well. So you get two guys who are on the way up. They put them, you know, they match them so you've got a competitive fight. You've got two guys at the top. They're matched together so you've got a competitive fight. You don't see a guy at the bottom versus a guy at the top because it would be pointless. So what we're finding now is a guy who was at the top is beginning to fall down that ladder a bit. So he might have to start looking down the list rather than up the list for his next few opponents. That's if he wants to keep fighting.
I'm interested to see what he does too, because I think you're right. He's at that part now where it's like quote-unquote fun fights or, you know, it's that kind of the Vanderlei Silva tour or something like that, where it's like, look, it's you're not, you know, he's a huge name in Brazil. I'm telling you, he's a massive star in Brazil. And I think he's still a massive star in the United States. Certainly the controversy is stronger in the United States than it is in Brazil as far as his TRT use and that. But there's something there. I mean, I think he could beat those lower tier fighters, but he's another one that I wouldn't be shocked if that was the last time we saw him.
You know what's crazy? I interviewed him earlier this week, and he wants a Legends division created. He wants things like... That tells me that he still wants to fight in some capacity.
Right.
But I agree with you. I think he is such a massive star in Brazil. And perhaps, you know, if he wants to continue to fight, maybe give him top 15, top 20 guys instead of maybe top 5, top 10 guys. Look, at the end of the day, if Dan Henderson is still able to, you know, put out a performance against Hector Lombard at the age, you know, he is this year, I'm sure, like, on his night, Vitor Belfort can still get it done. It's just, as of late, he's not been looking like his old self.
No, not at all. Okay, let's talk about somebody else that shocked me a little bit tonight, Jimmy Manoah. I mean, that dude looked fantastic in the second round. Not so great in the first round. Didn't look that great. That's how I thought the fight was going to go. I thought Ovince St. Preux was just going to kind of, you know, play with them a little bit on the feet, but know that there's no reason to stand there and trade. Bring the fight to the ground, clinch work, that sort of thing. The second round, I don't want to take anything away from Jimmy Manoah, but it looked to me like OSP just got real tired really fast. Don't know if it was the 3 a.m. thing. Don't know if there was something in his camp or whatever, but it just seemed like he faded really fast. But to Jimmy's credit, he saw it. He pounced on it. The vicious body shots that he was throwing were nasty in there. And then, you know, the hooks up top sealed the deal. Brutal. What did you think about Manoah?
I mean, I think he needed this. He needed a signature win, pay-per-view, main card in Manchester. And against a guy who just fought arguably the greatest of all time, I went the distance with John Jones.
That's crazy.
Right? That's just crazy to even think about that right now. But, I mean, that was definitely, you know, a highlight reel knockout for Manoah. One of the highlight knockouts you're going to see probably all year long. The only thing that, again, disappointment, we just spoke about this, Stan... Just teed him up.
Just give me anybody.
And for the light heavyweight division, that is just dying for someone to kind of break through, make some noise, you know, apart from the obvious three or four names at the top. Say something. Saying, oh, I want to fight top five fighter, or I want to fight the best guys
it's
in the
not
world.
Enough.
I just want big fights. That's not cutting it in 2016,
yeah.
Right? Like, guys like Bisping and McGregor, they're showing you the blueprint here, right? You got to give up something to get excited for the next fight. And
Bisping got dropped twice, went through a damn 25-minute war, and still cut a promo at the end.
I mean, he's the you know, one of the best in the world doing that. Him and McGregor and these guys, they get it. They know what's up. And like you said, after going through a five-round war with Dan Henderson, he still had his wits about him to cut a promo like that. Not on one guy, but four guys in his division.
We got beef with all of them, just in case.
Exactly. Bisping, absolutely vintage performance by him. But going back to Manoah for a second, he needed this win. He's 36 years old. I mean, it's sometimes a bit weird, right? Because, you know, he's had a up and down kind of a journey in the UFC, mm-hmm. but the downs have come against Alexander Gustafsson,
right?
Anthony Johnson, right? You know, two of the top maybe four light heavyweights in the world right now. So, you know, he's still got time on his hands. He's still got that athletic, explosive power that can knock out any light heavyweight on his given night. Mm-hmm. But I just want to see him try and get his personality across a little bit more, make some noise. And he still has some time to do it. But listen, at the end of the day, putting the post-fight interview to the side just for 1 second, what a flipping knockout that was.
It was. It was brutal. You had the folded up leg there that was incredibly uncomfortable and just powerful shots. Simon, I think you figured out earlier that you've been cage side for 10 of Jimmy Manoah's past 11 fights.
Yeah.
So you have closely followed his career. He's had some starts and stops. He's had some ups and downs. He's had some weird ones. As Schumacher said, sometimes he's not the most exciting guy on a microphone at all times. But overall, what did you think about this performance tonight?
This, for me, was like the culmination of an awful lot of work that's been put in. As you say, I've just through coincidence as much as anything and timing, I've been at 10 of the last 11 fights. The only one I wasn't at was the knockout loss to Anthony Johnson at UFC 191. Mm-hmm. And I watched him go through the domestic scene, just destroying people. And he got offered two opportunities.
Would you call that domestic violence?
Sorry?
Would you call that domestic violence?
That would probably cast it in a rather shady light. I wouldn't want to do that. But the he absolutely just destroyed people, and he got offered two opportunities to join the UFC, and twice he turned them down.
That's right.
He said, "I'm not ready."
That's amazing.
I'm not ready. Incredibly mature, and you know, the confidence in his own convictions to say, "I'll get there, but I'll get there when I'm I'll join you when I'm ready." Mm-hmm. And he got his shot, and he was in the middle of he had a run of like four fights where he TKO'd his opponent. But each one of those was either a doctor stoppage or an injury stoppage or a fighter retiring on his stool. So he hadn't really, you know, he's getting the wins, but he's not getting that, yep. The real notoriety in the moment.
That exclamation point on there.
Yeah, and I've spoken to him about this before, and it's been a source of a little bit of frustration that he's never had that big highlight reel moment. And he's had those two losses. They are the only two losses of his career, by the way. Alexander Gustafsson and Anthony Johnson. People were very quick to write him off, particularly after the Johnson one. But Johnson does that to everybody.
Yeah, ask Glover to share. Legit top five guys.
But to go in there with OSP, who not only went the distance with John Jones, he went the distance with John Jones with a broken arm. And to put him away like that was for me just reward for the guy. I think he did very well. He's training up at All Stars these days. In Stockholm, and he was telling me in the week that it has been a complete game changer for him in terms of getting his defensive wrestling more on point. That was probably the biggest weakness in his game when he joined the UFC. He's much more ready for the light heavyweight division now, and that punch power, I maintain, probably behind Anthony Rumble Johnson, he's the next most destructive striker in that division.
A beastly. All right, Stefan Struve picked up a submission win over late replacement Daniel Omelianchuk. Good performance. I mean, the size difference is just, I mean, it's usually crazy with anybody's Struve fights, but I don't know, it was like almost comical tonight with Omelianchuk. It just trying to throw those big power hooks and couldn't get there. But I said going in, I picked Struve in the fight, but I said, listen, taking Omelianchuk on short notice is tough. And I think that's just a tough, grindy dude. And for Struve to win that fight the way he did, I think it was good for him. Rashad Bektik also picked up a submission win over late replacement Russell Doan. Damian Stajewski, as Goldie called him at the weigh-ins, I believe, picked up a submission win over Davey Grant. Fun fight, especially the ending transition. Davey is just kind of fun to watch, man. He's just crazy. He's just manic in there, both in his submission grappling and in his striking. But just got caught, man. He got caught in a beautiful little transition from Damian Stasiak. And, God, kudos to Davey for trying to fight out of that. But I seriously thought we were seeing a man's arm get, like, snapped right in front of us. It was bad. But kudos to both guys. That was a gutsy finish, especially.
It reminded me of Dan Hardy in GSP. I know that's kind of like, yeah, anyone's in an armbar and they're kind of fighting through it. That's the kind of image and memory that I think everyone kind of harkens back to, is GSP fighting out of that armbar Dan Hardy, yeah, fighting out of the armbar that GSP got on him. And like, I think from where we were kind of sitting, cage side, it looked like the elbow kind of popped out a little bit, and it was like, crunching. And even in the post-fight quote that the UFC provided us with, I think Davey Grant said, he heard a crunch and a crack, and you know, he heard it pop out and stuff, which is really, really brutal. And the thing is, Grant wasn't doing too bad up until that moment.
Right?
He was winning that fight.
And I thought, had he just kept on going to the body like he was and kept the fight on his feet, I thought he was on his way to a victory there. But mm-hmm. Kudos to Stasiak for getting him down and getting that beautiful armbar on him.
It was nice. Simon, talk about Leon Edwards versus Albert Tumanov, another fight where I thought Tumanov, after a slow start, was kind of gaining momentum, and then Leon Edwards – I thought showed just some nice development in his game and some nice character there to get this little takedown, get to the back. And I think Tumanov probably kind of probably was willing to expose his back because he knew that like he couldn't just ride out the end of the round like he did the first round because he'd lose the decision. But kudos to Edwards, man. I mean, snuck in the choke real quick and got the finish.
Yeah, he came into the UFC as known as a striker. But we're learning that there are more wrinkles to this young man's game. When he took on Don Waters last time out, we were surprised and impressed with his wrestling skills. Mm-hmm. And that's what won in the fight then. And against Tumanov, he went to his ground skills again. You know, a lot of people are high on Tumanov's striking. Leon's striking is good. Tumanov was winning the striking exchanges. Leon used his brain, went to his wrestling, got the fight to the mat, and got the submission win. He trains out of a gym in Birmingham called UTC, who very quietly are building a reputation as one of the best gyms in the UK. Tom Breeze now trains there as well, having come back from Canada. He now has left TriStar, and he's now back in the
Askham's
UK.
Askham's a part of that gym as well, isn't he?
Sorry?
Is Scott Askham a part of that gym as well?
No, Scott Askham is part of the Unit 7 gym, ASW,
right?
Where Mike Wilkinson trains up as well.
Yep.
As has a certain Mark Diakese, who I'm sure we'll mention in a minute. But yeah, I was really seriously impressed. For me, he was one of the standout British performers. This is a well-rounded mixed martial artist. And sometimes us British guys, we get labelled with the one-dimensional striking tag. Mm-hmm. This guy can do stuff on the ground as well, and he's demonstrating it against a guy who a lot of people were tipping for the top. So really impressed with him.
I was too. Well, you mentioned Diakese, so that's as good as time as any to talk, bring him up. To me, seeing him cage side for the first time, as good as promised. I mean, a little silly at first. He, you know, came out and was trying to throw the flying knee, and it didn't really work. And then he held back, and you know, a little bit some problems to start with. But man, that guy is so relaxed and composed and creative. And of course, when he decides to throw a flying knee, or when he decides to get things going, man, he can bang. To me, this kid looks like the real deal.
Yeah, he had a lot of hype coming into this fight, especially from the local UK MMA media, who have been kind of, you know, really bigging him up, especially given that his last couple of performances for Bama were like knockouts in the first minute of the first round. But he's coming in with the blonde streak through his hair, so he's kind of got that kind of, you know, personality trait.
A little swagger,
which I like, which is a good thing. You know, like,
and the UFC will tell you this is what swagger looks like if you pay attention to their
advertising. Please.
In the Reebok era that we are in, right, it's really, really hard for these fighters to kind of get some personality across. So if you can do something with your hair or, you know, get a nice tattoo or something. Or
paint yourself green.
Yeah, exactly. Anything you can do to stand out, good on you.
Yeah.
But listen, regardless of how much hype and promotion you have coming into your first UFC fight, that first UFC fight, that spotlight's huge. That comes with octagon jitters and so forth. But like you said, he was all smiles. And maybe it had to do with the fact that it is in his backyard and in Manchester. He had the whole hometown, you know, guy, you know, feel to him, and the crowd were really behind him as well. So maybe that kind of helped put him at ease. But other guys perhaps would have folded under that kind of pressure and under that kind of spotlight. But he did well. Good to get the first win under his belt, and now he can kick on from there. But again, I hate to hark on this, and maybe this is going to be a running theme for this card, but he won and he got teed up by Stan, and he didn't really have a name.
Right.
You know, imagine coming in with a blonde streak, you got your first win in the UFC, and it's like on a pay-per-view card, so to speak, and, you know, say I'm the new guy in this division, I'm going to run through everyone, including the champion, and, you know, make a statement right off the bat. But listen, I'm sure he'll have plenty of time to do that in the future. Good thing is, he's got a win under his belt, and he can kick off from there.
Looks like the real deal. Mike Perry, Danny Roberts. Was that the real fight of the night? Did they get hosed out of 50 G's?
Yeah, I've met Danny Roberts for the first time this week. I know he's a British fighter, and I'm a British journalist. He bases himself out with the Black Zillions, he's a great guy. He's got a great sense of humor. He's very laid back. He's got a great personality. He's got a little bit of star power about him, yep. I think. And I was very excited, and I watched him fight against Dominique Steele in Vegas, I think it was. That was a great fun fight, and he showed that he could get through some adversity and get through that fight. But Mike Perry is just made out of different stuff. I mean,
could say that.
You know, people might not like the man's personality and stuff, and I can understand that.
He needs a new tattoo, by the way, on his face. He needs the word iron across his chin.
Yeah.
He's got, yeah, I was about to say, he's got hands of stone and a chin of iron. He's an absolute tank of a man for welterweight. He's not very tall, but he's solid. And he was losing that fight relatively clearly during the rounds. If you're watching the fight, Danny Roberts was lighting him up with technique. Like, if you were watching it as a technician, as a student of the game, you'd be saying, that guy Roberts is good, and this lad Perry's not really got a lot. But when Perry put his hands on him, then everything changed.
Everything changed.
And at the end of that fight, it was one of the sickest knockouts I've seen in a long time. It's a brutal, brutal knockout. There's a very unfortunate picture appeared on Getty Images, because at the end of that fight, Danny Roberts was down and out for quite a while. And there was a shot. They shouldn't have published it, in my opinion, because it just looks bad. And it doesn't make Mike Perry look good. And it's not his fault. He's winning. He's just won a fight and he's celebrating a win. That's understandable. Like, literally heat at the moment, giving it the big roar. The camera angle has got him and then the medics who have rushed around a clearly still unconscious Danny Roberts. Is just not a good look. Thankfully, Danny was up after a short spell. Had to be helped out of the octagon.
Yeah, I don't
helped
think he
pass
knew
us.
Where he was when he walked past us.
He looked very, very, very battered and very emotional. And you just hope that this doesn't curtail his career and do anything confidence-wise to him, because he looks like someone who thrives on his own self-confidence.
Yeah.
So hopefully we see him back in there sooner rather than later. Obviously, once he's fully rested. But Mike Perry, he's a guy to watch just because he rubs people up the wrong way, and that sells tickets.
Yeah, his manager, Abe Kawa, told us in Germany he found him on the Florida scene, and he was actually knocking out heavyweights down there. I mean, the guy is the real deal. Lastly, Leo Santos and Adriano Martins happened. I will say, MMA Junkie Pear, who's not here right now, our Swedish photographer, shared a little bit of information from his photo bank. You know, he's a photographer. He's cage side. He's got a judge right next to him. He said the judge wasn't there for the first round.
Wow.
So I haven't had a chance to follow up with the UFC, who acted as commission, and find out. Maybe the guy was just standing in the wrong position or in a chair somewhere he wasn't supposed to be. But I'm interested to go back and watch the tape, because Pear said the judge wasn't there for the first round. And when you consider that the fight was a split decision, you wonder where that first score came. So
what do you do in that situation? Do you just score it 10-10? What do you do?
Well, again, I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he was just in the wrong place and was like, that's what I'm going to assume, is that he was seated. Now, we're going to follow up on that, but I'm going to assume for the time being he was just seated somewhere else, happened to be in the wrong place, was in the wrong chair, and then they moved him. No, you're supposed to be right here. That's what I'm going to hope. So, all right, well, listen, we're all up against it. You've got a train to catch. You've got a train to catch. I've got a plane to catch. I need to get all this uploaded to my man, Cole Coffey, so he can get this edited and put on the internet. We were going to be in Manila together next week. Obviously, that's not going to happen. So, I'll take a week at home. Get caught up on sleep. It's been a fun run. Gentlemen, always a pleasure to see you. Thank you very much for sitting in. It's now closing in on 11 a.m., so we should probably all try to get some sleep. So we'll just tell everybody out there, thanks for listening. ¶¶